Okay, so have a good lunch, and during this time I will discuss how one goes from independent particle towards collective motion in two dimensions. The particle I will use will be either spinless fermion or electron with spin. Those particles will be free to move on a lattice. The lattice will be assumed to be a square lattice. The boundary condition will be periodic, so the geometry of the system will be the geometry of a torus. Those particles will be charged. They will repel each other with a U over R interaction, the Bar-Coulomb interaction. And the question is to know how one goes from the weak coupling limit towards the strong coupling limit in the small system. So as you can see, this is not at all a new subject. It has been addressed since the early day of quantum mechanics. The name of Fermi is attached to the weak coupling limit. The name of Wigner is attached to the large coupling limit. And many people have worked on this issue. For instance, weak and strong coupling expansion has been done at the end of the 50s. And then numerical work are still in progress to understand better this question. The numerical work could be divided in two parts. You have a numerical work where you want to look at a large number of particles or to look at a continuous model, and then you're obliged to do approximation. Or you can restrict yourself to very small system where the numerical generalization of the Hamiltonian could be done exactly without any approximation, and therefore you are of course limited to very small model. So this is what we have done in collaboration with various PhD students or postdoc having worked with me in the last couple of years. And I would like to show you what we have seen. I will mostly use results obtained by Adam Lemay, a PhD Hungarian student, and Moises Martinez, a Mexican postdoc, plus some work obtained also by Frank Samba. So the outline of my talk will be as follows. I would like first to refer to some other work I have recently noticed where a similar question has been addressed, but in system where you have an harmonic confinement and where the particle are not confined, as I will discuss, on a too high. So this is a system where the density is not uniform compared to the system we will consider. And I have noticed this year the claim that the quantum melting of the Wigner molecule when you consider a few electrons in a parabolic trap occur in two stages. And I would like to contrast this result, which is obtained using a small number of particles, with what we believe for electrons in two dimensions as a function of the coupling parameter RS, where mostly using results coming from the Monte Carlo work, we believe that there is a simple liquid towards solid transition at a certain RS value. The RS value given by those numerical Monte Carlo simulation being 37. So after having reminded you this, I will come to the simplest problem where I have just two particles, and we will look at the ground state on a square lattice with periodic boundary condition, and it would be for me the opportunity to introduce the characteristic lines and to show that there is sample scaling which could be done for two particles. And then after this we will go to three particles, and we will see that when the coupling is strong you have a rigid three particle molecule, and when you decrease the coupling you go in some regime where you have some intermediate partially melted Wigner molecule made of two particles combined together with a sub-delocalized particle. And this reminds me very strongly an idea which has been put forward in 69 by Andreev Lifshitz about the quantum melting of the solid. So after this, we will see a similar result, let us say, with a similar message using not three but four particles. And then I would like to address what does disorder and what does the spin of the small system. So this is a program. So I notice that people are interested to look at this kind of problem, for instance, where you have two particles in an harmonic trap. So this is the kinetic energy, the Coulomb interaction, and the harmonic confinement which is assumed. So in this case, you have one parameter. The parameter is this omega naught, which tell you if the stripe, if the trap is strongly confining or weakly confining. And playing with this parameter, you could go from collective motion when the trap do not confine very much the particle toward independent particle motion when you squeeze your particle and the trap become the well, let us say, become very small. So you have a parameter which is a ratio between the Coulomb energy and the kinetic energy, and depending on this parameter, you could see this crossover. So this has been, for instance, studies in this reference, where due to the symmetry of the trap, you can decouple the motion of the center of mass with a relative separation motion, and then you could identify what is this system for a weakly confining trap, where you form a rigid trimeric molecule, and this molecule could rotate, stretch, or bend. And you could look at this spectrum and analyze this spectrum in terms of those collective excitation of this correlated two-particle object. And then when you start to squeeze the two particles, then the analysis becomes more difficult, and it is just mentioned that you go that the spectrum transforms to that of a floppy molecule to smaller RW. So this is what could be done, and as you see, it's mostly in the limit where you are close to the strong coupling limit that it is possible to push the analysis to a very good status. Similar work has been done, again, some Hamiltonian. The difference between the former Hamiltonian is that now we do not consider two particles, two electrons, but n, and varying between 10 and 20. So this is a kind of mesoscopic system. The interest of those systems could be related, as mentioned here, by physics of quantum dots, also by physics of cold ion, you know, that it is possible to trap cold atoms with electromagnetic field. If those atoms are boson, you have this famous story of boson-Stern condensation, but if you use ions, then you could also try to observe this crossover from independent particle toward collective motion in cold ion trap in electromagnetic field. So what they have studied is this using quantum Monte Carlo. And then the claim is that the linear crystallization of those n particles inside a parabolic trap occur in two stages. It consists first by radial ordering of electron and shell, and then freezing of intershell rotation. So the claim is that the scenario when you go from weak coupling towards strong coupling is interesting and give you rise to some intermediate regime between the two limits.
Do you have to use like a fixed
node
approximation? I mean, they cannot do it.
They do not. I think they do not mention. I will come to this sign problem later. Right. Here, they do not discuss very much this sign problem. I think they have used, you know, a certain temperature, and I am not sure that they have reached the ground state physics. They do not discuss, you know, the sign problem
it's
here.
Not zero temperature.
I mean, right. This is very low temperature. What they mention, they have first studied, you know, the melting with temperature. So you have a weakly confining trap with n particle, you form a Wigner molecule, and then you look how melt this molecule with temperature. And then it has been known, and you have even experiments showing that you have a two-stage melting with temperature. This is what they call the classical melting. And they say that, you know, you have a first orientational disordering of shell takes place. Neighboring shell may rotate relative to each other while retaining their internal order. And then after, you have the shell broadening, and then you go to a totally melt object. So classically, it is known. And what they say is also the case quantum mechanically, when you do not vary the temperature, but what you do is you squeeze your electron, and you stay at relatively low temperature, and you follow at relatively low temperature, or change your ground state when you squeeze the electron by changing the strength of the trap. So the picture that you could see, you know, it was shown, for instance, in this Physical Review Focus the last April, this kind of picture. So this is, you know, weakly confined electron, they form some correlated object, and when you start to squeeze them, as you see, you start to lose the orientation of the angular order, let us say, that you have here. And then after, in the second step, you use the radial order. So
that's an experiment?
This is a result of Monte Carlo simulation. I know experiment, you know, with temperature, not the quantum melting. I have seen a work by people in Constance, for instance, where they have seen this.
Get similar results?
Sorry?
The real experiments produce similar results?
I don't know. For the quantum melting, no. It is not yet seen.
So this business that you have an orientational and conditional order which melts separately is similar to a classical 2D crystal?
This is what they say. They say this is known classically, and it's also occur quantum mechanically. This is what they say. So, as you mentioned, this is quantum Monte Carlo, so we have to be careful with, you know, the... But I would like to contrast...
I think they may be used
with fixed knot. Exactly, they are used with fixed knot approximation. So I will come to this fixed knot approximation. In general, when you consider electron in two dimensions and not at all entrapped, the argument, of course, going back to Wigner, is to say that each electron occupy a certain volume of order of pi square, where A is the distance between electrons for a carrier density which is ms, and then you have to measure this characteristic scale of the volume occupied by one electron in terms of the Bohr radius. So if the Bohr radius is very small compared to this scale, you can forget quantum mechanics, you have mostly a problem of electrostatic, and then the charge will order. On the contrary, if the Bohr radius is of the order, if not larger, than the volume occupied by the electron, you have to be very careful with quantum mechanics to think, you know, to go to Mr. Pauli and Mr. Fermi to know what is the story. So it was a dimensionless parameter introduced by Wigner. And as you know, you could do what you can do, weak coupling and strong coupling expansion in power of RS or 1 over RS. It has been done in the 60s. Or you could do, and I will come to this, quantum Monte Carlo calculation, where you could handle a relative large number of particles, 100 even more sometimes. So the expert in this field is David Seperle, and what they say is that you have a simple transition from a solid toward a liquid. And if you put the spin, there is discussion which continue in this community to know if you have some intermediate phase where the liquid could be polarized and unpolarized. But if you look at this very often quoted work of Mikey Klein, what you see is this kind of figure, which shows you what is the energy of the solid and the energy of the liquid, and it's turned out that the energy of the liquid becomes higher than the energy of the solid at a certain RS factor, which is 37. And the people in this community are discussing if the polarized liquid could not give you some intermediate phase. But as you know, quantum Monte Carlo calculations are not exact, they are subjected to approximation.
And I think
this is a pure electron in two dimensions with Coulomb interaction, nothing else. And no lattice, this is a continuous model. So if you look at the paper more carefully, what you see, of course, is that they have this sign problem, and they have to fix this sign problem by an assumption. And the assumption is that the solution that you are looking at as an imposed knot structure. And this knot structure is coming from two assumptions. So what they say is that the fixed knot approximation is made to avoid the negative weight that would be otherwise generated by antisymmetric state. And then the fixed knot energy is an upper bound to the exact energy. So this is better than a variational approach, but this is not an exact approach. This is just an upper bound of the exact energy. So I say that if they find just a single transition between one solution to another, this is not a result, but this is what they have put in their calculation, because they have just to consider two kinds of nodal structure of the wave function. So the triangle wave functions that you use are those kind of just wave function. This is a scatter determinant, which gives you the nodal structure times some pseudo-potential correction. And for the nodal structure, if you are in the recoupling regime, they assume that you have to deal with a scatter determinant of a plane wave state, and if you are in the large coupling limit, then you take for the scatter determinant a scatter determinant of orbital where the electrons are localized on lattice site. So they consider two kinds of trial wave function, which give you a nodal structure, And it turned out that the nodal structure corresponding to the liquid become higher than the solution imposed by the nodal structure of the solid at RS equals 37. So they might be right, but you know, this is not free of approximation. And this is, the art, the status of the art in this field. I have noticed a more recent reference by those people, where again they mention that the restriction is exact if the nodal surfaces of the trial density matrix are correct. And they do approximation for the nodal structure of the density matrix. So as you see, in small system, it's possible that you can go from the large coupling limit to the small coupling limit through some intermediate stage. You can ask yourself, is it not something related to the symmetry of the trap that you are considering? You have a system which has no uniform density. You could say maybe there is some surface ordering which has some interplay with some bulk ordering, and it might be some artifact coming from the formation of a linear molecule in a parabolic trap. And this is why I was interested to study a system on a torus where the density is not uniform, is uniform contrary to the case which has been studied using harmonic trap. So let us start very smoothly with what we can see with two particles. So the Hamiltonian I will start to discuss is just an Hamiltonian of a spinless fermion, which are defined on an L par L lattice with permeable boundary condition. The geometry is the geometry of a torus. So I call Gx, Gy the coordinate of a lattice side, or Kx, Ky the coordinate of the momentum of a plane wave state that you have for the one body problem. And then I could express my Hamiltonian in terms of the destruction or creation operator, where you create a spinless fermion either at a site G or either at in a one body state of momentum K when I have no disorder. So this is I go from this Hamiltonian to this Hamiltonian with this customary Fourier transformation. As you see, the Coulomb interaction is equivalent to destroy two electrons or two spinless fermions of momentum K and K prime, and to rebuild them at momentum K prime minus Q and K plus Q with a certain wedge, which is given when you have Coulomb interaction by this expression. You want to ask me?
Yeah, before we sample in this case, what will be the goal?
Yeah?
What will be the goal?
So the goal is mostly to look at the exact ground state in small system and to see what we can learn from those exact ground state.
And you have only periodic boundary conditions?
Yes.
What about
sorry?
What about how the world boundary conditions? I mean, it could give
no.
Different results. I mean,
that's right, but you know, yes, but I prefer to have system without edge in order to have a uniform density. So this is the Hamiltonian, and as you see, if you work in, if you write the Hamiltonian matrix in the non-interacting eigenbasis, where you create your particle in plane wave states of momentum K1, Kn, then total momentum is conserved, as you can see here, and therefore it has a block diagonal structure, each of the blocks having the same total momentum for the center of mass. And if you are working with more than two particles, of course, those matrices are also sparse because, as you can see by this operator, you can only couple the non-interacting state which has two out of n, which you should have n minus two identical quantum number. So those matrices will be sparse for n larger than or equal to three. And then they could be diagonalized if the system is small enough using exact diagonalization. So what do you see when you have just two particles? So let us show you first the quantum mechanical expectation of the relative separation between two charges on those torus. It has a certain value without interaction. And this value do not change very much up to a certain interaction, where the separation between those two charges start to increase to reach the largest possible separation they could have in this finite system. Here, I discussed two spinless fermions in 10 by 10 So of course, the relative separation could not exceed 10 over square root of 2. So this is what you see, and you have a crossover from a regime where the separation do not change very much with interaction to the regime where you start to repel your charge because the interaction is large. You can look at this, but you could also look at the relative fluctuation of this separation divided by its average, and you observe three regimes. A regime for weak interaction where the relative fluctuation is large compared to the average, so this is not a very well defined concept, the separation between the two charges. And then you have a regime where the fluctuation starts to decrease compared to the average, and therefore the separation between the two charges become more and more well defined, up to a value where the lattice effect becomes strong, and this could be handled by very simple T over U perturbation theory. So what I would like to show you is that you have indeed some simple scaling to describe the crossover from this limit toward this limit. So the argument is very simple, and it could be said this way. I consider a lattice with one particle, and I add a second particle to the problem. So I look at the increase of kinetic energy that I have in a system without interaction. So the first particle should be in the lowest energy states minus 40. I am obliged to put the second in this first excited state, and therefore the difference of energy, the increase of kinetic energy that I have when I put a second particle inside the system is given by this difference, which could be simplified when L is large enough, to this number. Now I consider the problem without kinetic energy, without topping, just the electrostatic problem, and therefore the increase of electrostatic energy when I have a second particle inside the system is given by this characteristic energy. So as you see, there is a scale where those two increases of energy are equal, and this should be the characteristic scale of my problem. And therefore the question is to know if my system size is smaller or larger than this scale, and I should have some scaling in unit of the system size that I have in terms of this characteristic scale. This is a scale again where the increase of kinetic energy without interaction is equal to the increase of Coulomb energy without kinetic energy. So it is possible, for instance, to show, and this is what we have done, that the relative fluctuation of the separation divided by the average is just a function of this ratio times some finite size correction. If such a scaling law is correct, it should be right for every value of the interaction, including no interaction, when L not is infinite. And therefore, it is possible to calculate those corrections without interaction, and the result turns out to be those two functions that you could calculate without interaction. Which you have a positive correction, those corrections go as the inverse of the number of sites. The sign becomes different depending on the parity of the size of the matrix that you are considering.
There is no
spin. No, this is spinless for the moment. And indeed, you know, what you could see is that when you assume this scaling, all the data shrink on this simple scaling curve, where you go from the weak coupling limit toward the strong coupling limit, and you have a crossover which turns out to be as it should when the system size is order of this characteristic length that I have defined. So this is the result that we have for an event where you have to take into account this correction. But you see here that you have data calculated for L equals 6. This is a small system. This is the circle that you could see here. And we have calculated also for 60 per 60, much larger system. This is the asterisk that you could see up to here. So you have simple scaling, which tells you that this behavior is more or less the behavior of the continuous limit of the large system size. So you can do the same for even value of L, where you have a slightly different correction to include, and then you get the same scaling curve. So this is what you can say for two particles. This is rather simple. So let us go to three now.
For large you, it doesn't come up.
No, because for large you, you enter in the regime where the lattice effects are important, and this is not the scaling behavior. You know, when interaction is small, forget the lattice. When interaction is large, the lattice play a role. So let us go now to three particles. When the interaction is very strong, you have you will form what I would like to call a Wigner molecule. For instance, I give you an example for a 6x6 lattice where the location of the charge which minimize the electrostatic energy corresponds to those triangles. But as I told you, of course, the momentum is conserved, and therefore you have after to assume that the center of mass of this molecule go in a place with a total momentum k. And therefore, when the interaction will be very large, the eigenstate of this problem will correspond to create particles to form a certain pattern at site A, B, and C. And then this has to be, of course, combined with all the possible translation with a given momentum for the total center of mass. It is possible in this limit to do large coupling expansion in T over U. So you could calculate, for instance, the separation between the charge and the fluctuation of the separation using this kind of expansion. And you could also calculate the first low energy level of your system when the interaction is large in terms of an expansion, which introduces two things, T effective and R effective. T effective is related to the translation of the center of mass of those triangles, which is equivalent to put by one away each of the three particles. So this T effective go as T over the number of particles divided by U times N minus 1. While on the contrary, you have also another motion which could be possible in this case, for instance, which is when this particle goes here, which also contribute at some term of order T power L over 2. And for 6, it turns out that the two contributions are of the same order.
You have long range interaction also.
Yes, I have totally long range. I'm screwing around.
What I do not understand, if you didn't have boundaries, then what would prevent particles to go as far as possible from
it? So here you have to confine them by some, either you put, you know, a positive density of charge, which is equivalent to impose an harmonic trap, for instance, which could cause. But here, you know, they are on the torus, so they cannot, you know, go outside the torus.
Yes, I understand, but the question is that if you started to increase in the size of torus...
Yes, they will stay, they will repel, so, you know, they will have a tendency to find the configuration which optimizes their separation on the torus, so that it will be... they will not escape.
Assume that you keep the density constant.
Yes, you have to compensate by the background.
Right, but on the torus, you do not need to introduce any compensation. It will give you just a constant, you know. So we have looked at the following thing.
But the distance, you have interaction dependent on distance, and the distance is calculated along the torus, right?
Yes. With the assumption that the separation between two charges is the smallest distance you could define on a square lattice with periodic boundary condition. This is the way it defines the separation between the two charges.
But essentially as assuming periodic boundary condition.
This is periodic boundary condition.
I mean, in the sense, since every polygon interacts with the other one on the torus, it's as if you had the same repeated. With
yes.
N particles everywhere the same.
Yes.
The expression in your previous slide, the fact that there are no other harmonics is just an approximation. You have no other harmonics but cosine kx and cosine lkx.
This is the lowest, you know, what I have shown is what are the perturbative results. Yes, and then after you have higher order in this expansion. This is the beginning of the expansion, so you have some correction which do not depend on the wave vector, and the first term where the wave vector contribute are given by this order. And then after, it's depending on the number of chairs that you have and the size of the lattice that you consider to know what will be exactly the wave vector of your ground state for very large interaction. So, you know, what we have done is to look at some pattern which could correspond to some low energy states. So this pattern correspond to this kind of molecule, which could be assuming also that, you know, you have a momentum for the center of mass which is given. Okay. So in such a pattern, I could define three lines, the smallest separation between the charge and the largest separation between the charge and, of course, the third one. So those lines are extremely well defined when the interaction is very strong. And then what we have done is to follow the level, reducing the strength of the interaction, and we have looked at the evolution of the relative fluctuation of those lines when you are melting this subject by decreasing the interaction. So I give you an example, for instance, which has been obtained using a hyperhight lattice for a state which will be a state without total momentum and corresponding to this kind of pattern for very large interaction. It corresponds to your states for very large RS. And when you decrease RS, you can follow the relative fluctuation. This is the fluctuation of those lines divided by their average. And so what you can see is that you have a regime where these fluctuations do not vary very much with interaction. And then suddenly, these lines start to be well established. But the observation that you can see here, and I will show you another example, is that this lens is defined before the largest one. So what you can see here is that there is a regime which corresponds to the regime where you have between those two arrows, where you are starting to define a two particle object with a well-defined separation between those two particles, while the sun line is still not very well defined, and this is why this largest lens that we have studied still continue to have larger fluctuation. So this is the picture. Okay. And I think this is totally generic for the melting of any three particle molecule on this lattice. That you start first to delocalize one of the particles while keeping in a certain regime of interaction a relatively well-defined two particle molecule with the two others. So for instance, this is you know, what you could see from this example, and this is also what you could see from this other example, which corresponds to another kind of pattern with a different wave vector, where also you could see that the shorter lengths start to be well defined before the largest lengths. So
also a molten sublattice.
Sorry?
You might also call this a molten sublattice. You have sublattices, right? For every one of these two. Which are periodically repeated. And so one of the three melts before the other two.
That's right. So this is what I say, is that you go from the well-established molecule toward the melting molecule through some intermediate state where you have a partially melted molecule. And I would like to describe a little better, let us say, this partially melted molecule using, for instance, one of the ground state of LX equals 6 system, which corresponds to this total momentum for the center of mass, by introducing some very simple idea of what I would like to call an X-oriented partially melted linear molecule, which corresponds just to this wave function. But you know, the idea is very simple. You create two particles here and here, and you create the third particle in a plane wave state, which is well localized in the right direction, but extended in the X direction. So this corresponds to this three-body wave function that I have written here, where you create the particle at the site A, B, where the third is created, of course, in an extended state along the X direction with a momentum Kx, while the location in the right direction is still well defined. It has to be parallel to those two. So you could define a similar way the Y-oriented molecule, where you will create two like this and one like this, and then those wave functions are not orthogonal, but you could build an ansatz wave function for this partially melting linear molecule by combining the X and Y oriented molecule and subtracted the overlap, and it's turned out to give you this. So this is a very simple on that, which describe this partially melted object, and we will look how it work for not too large RS factor. So here, for instance, what you can see is the projection of this ansatz wave function over the ring ground state. You have four curves. The momentum of the delocalized particle has to be 0, 2 pi over 3, and minus 2 pi over 3 in this lattice with L equals 6. And then you see the projection of the ground state over the X-oriented partially melted molecule, where the subparticle is either in a plane wave state of a wave vector k equals 0 or k equal plus or minus 2 pi over 3. So as you see, for very large interaction, the three projections will be equal, which corresponds that you have restored the triangle. But when you decrease the interaction, what you could see is that the projection over the wave vector plus and minus 2 pi over 3 goes to 0, where you have still a large projection over a particle which is still in a k equals 0 plane wave states parallel to the Wigner molecule. And when you combine now the X and Y oriented Wigner molecule, keeping only k equals 0, you get this rather good overlap of this ansatz wave function over the real ground state for an RS factor of the order of 100. So of course, in this ansatz, you assume that this partially that the remaining two particle Wigner molecule is very rigid, which is not correct. As you can see here, you can neglect the other wave vector k outside k equals 0 for the third particle if we are at here, because it's only the k equals 0 projection which is important. But the ansatz should be improved by considering the possibility to have some, let us say, less rigid two-particle molecule, which could be done using a partial T over U expansion, allowing the motion of one of those particles by one hop or two hop, if you go to first or second order, where you assume that you do not change the states of this third particle, which is still in the plane wave state, so momentum k. So this is a very simple partial improvement of this ansatz by allowing vibration of the rigid object which was overestimated in the previous ansatz. And then we can see now that indeed allowing some vibration of the solid object that you have, then you improve not only the agreement but also you are able to reach a smaller interaction. So here this is this ansatz, the bar ansatz, let us say. This is corrected to first order in this partial T over U expansion, to second order in this partial T over U expansion. And you see that the overlap of this improvement that over the real ground states now start to be quite good for an interaction which is a little lower than the previous one. So it seems that this is indeed what we have for our ground state for an RS value which turned out to be of the order of 40. We could look at, for instance, the mistake in energy that we are doing with this ansatz, and this is the result at zero order, first order, second order in this perturbative expansion. So as you see, the energy start to be not very far from the actual, from the real energies. And we have also looked to what extent our ansatz is describing the separation between the particle and their fluctuation. So you see here the separation between the particle as a function of RS, and this is our ansatz, and you see indeed that for an RS of order of 20, this is 40, then the real value which are given by the CLAC are not very far from the ansatz value given by the SIMLAG. So this is for the quantum mechanical expression of the three lines that you could define with your three particles. If you look at the fluctuation, you could see also that this ansatz wave function describes rather well the fluctuation. This is here the variance of those lines in terms of the RS parameter. And then you recover, more or less, the behavior which correspond to the exact behavior for this three-particle problem, using this idea of a partially melted Wigner molecule. So, you know, it's reminding very strongly this work proposed in 69 by Andreev and Lipschitz about a quantum theory of defect in crystal, where they were conjecturing that at low temperature, localized defect or impurity change into excitation that move practically freely through a crystal. Such a crystal is neither a solid nor a liquid. Two kinds of motion are possible in it. One possesses the property of motion in an elastic solid. The second possesses the property of motion in a liquid. The existence of zero temperature defecton means that the number of sites in an ideal crystal, lattice, does not coincide with the number of atoms. So I think, you know, this is a very simple illustration of this idea that I have here, where I have three particles, and for some intermediate coupling, my ground state is built by a two-particle crystal, two-particle molecule, together with a delocalized third particle.
So, I mean, to some extent, this is all about frustration, right? I mean, if I really had three particles in space with, like, Leonard Jones potential, then the ground state is presumably, you know, each of them finds, is at the optimum distance from each of the others, and there's none of this.
But that would be meant to this now?
Well, I'm saying that you're already starting from a system where somehow the order that three electrons would like to have is not consistent with the overall symmetry of your space. I mean, you have this thing on a torus.
Okay.
And I'm just, you know, is this...
No, there is a question which is important, and I don't know if it's your question, that what you mean by fluctuation, which is to what extent this is an effect which is valid in the continuous limit, or to what extent it is a lattice effect.
Or a symmetry effect of the space that you're...
Yeah, yes, but you know, I have considered a system where you have invariance upon translation. I showed you before example where you have invariance under rotation, and there is some similarity in the observation. That, you know, you melt your rigid object through some interesting intermediate regime.
It's like, I mean, I could, you know, if I try to put particles on a sphere, the sphere has certain symmetry, but that's not
my claim.
I still have frustrated interactions among these particles. Like, I can't wrap a Wigner lattice onto a sphere, so I have to maybe think about some unfrustrated space, some curved space or something that I want to put these particles on. So it's not obvious to me that...
This is a different point. What Jean-Louis is claiming, that if you have the number of your frustration, if you want to put it on the sphere, is fixed. It's just, you know. So if you make your level spacing, lattice constant very small, then you have your dislocation and it matches in the sphere. The different point is that in quantum mechanics, there is no rule that the number of the nodes in the lattice and the number of particles are identical. So what may happen is that you have what is called supersolid. The word was invented by this very construction.
Right. So supersolid, in general, people refer to boson in this case. Because in this case, of course, you know, the delocalized effect could be superfluid. So the supersolid is a state where a solid could coexist with a superfluid if you have boson. I am discussing the fermionic version of this, where of course I do not expect superfluidity, at least.
No, but the important thing is that you may have a finite concentration for given radius and any radius constant, a given concentration. A finite concentration, to say 30% of your nodes are empty. And that would be what this Andreev Lipschitz construction.
No, I understand that this is not a lattice effect, but it's still a question of what symmetry your particles would have and what symmetry the space they're embedded in would have. So
it is a question of what is the concentration of the zero point effect independently from topology of the underlying manifold.
But don't you think that you could find some space where there was were unfrustrated?
What I'm trying to say is that the number of compensating dislocation
right
is, it depends on topology.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, but if you change your lattice parameter,
that's irrelevant.
It is relevant because the number of his defects is proportional to number of sides, and number of his defects is fixed. So if the lattice, if lattice constant is going to zero, the number of his defects is larger than number of his defects 1 over n.
Just to clarify the picture, you know, if you take this strange story, it seems, you know, maybe I'm wrong, it seems that each atom in the solid for a very long time can wander as far away as he wants from the initial position.
Yeah.
So there is really no localization. At the same time, if you, you know, if you make X-ray scattering from this, you'll get black peaks.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yes, yes.
So you get all the parameters of the solid and you get diffusion at the same time.
Yeah. Exactly. You have finite concentration of defects of crystalline structure at zero temperature.
And because of that, they can diffuse and the particles also move.
So this idea has a long history. I don't know what is the status of this idea. It has been discussed in the context of helium physics.
It definitely does not exist in helium. It is known that
yes,
in helium, the excitation, the activation energy of all kinds of defects in both helium 3 and helium 4 is much larger than it's about 10
kilometers. It is run out for helium. This is your plan. This is totally run out for helium. This is what you say. This idea is totally run out for helium.
It is run out for helium
right.
Long time ago.
Long time ago, I don't know. You know, I have seen it. 79 work by Nozier and Castan, for instance, where they were still discussing this. So you know, for boson, you know, for this idea is still discussed for. By people, you know, using boson about the lattice model also.
The most recent thing I know is discussion by Sean and company.
Yes.
For
and people in Davis too.
Yes. That about this subject, I don't know what is.
Mm-hmm.
What is the status?
But
definitely not
confused. So you know, the very simple idea I was discussing is kind of very elementary picture of this stat.
Just as a matter of relaxation.
When
it was proposed, when it was a solid low temperature conference in Belize, and it was a number of articles in general newspapers, so somebody suggested that a monument to both Gibson and Dreyer would be erected in Belize made out of this material.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know, but you know, this problem is complicated and, you know, what I observe is some strange behavior for intermediate interaction, and I try in some sense to give some meaning to those observations. So you know what I say very simply is that in this small model I could have a ground state where I have two particles which form a molecule while the third is delocalized. This is the first point. The second point, you know, is that these two stage melting that people claim to have observed in parabolic trap has nothing to do with the surface effect, because it is also, you know, multi-stage process that you could see on a two-dimensional torus. And then, you know, I think there is a very deep question about what is a nodal structure of your wave function for intermediate coupling. Is it as simple as the nodal structure which is assumed by people doing quantum Monte Carlo, or is it not, you know, the possibility to have much more complicated nodal structure? So, I have just 5 minutes left, and you know, I think I will have difficulty to finish what I have prepared. So, you know, what I could say, well, maybe I could flash some curious behavior, let us say, which still go in the same direction. When you use not three but four particles, so this is some work that we have done, and skipping the detail, the observation was that for a large RS, it seems that the object that we have is simple. This is a rigid Wigner molecule. For a small interaction, this object looks also simple, but we were curious to understand better the regime between those RS value of 10 and 27 in this case, where, again, the things are more puzzling. So a very simple idea that we have pushed is to project the ground state over either the eigenstate of the interaction Hamiltonian, which correspond to this kind of pattern. And then we have figured out indeed that the projection of the ground state for intermediate interaction was large but not total over, for instance, this kind of Wigner molecule with a given wave vector for the total momentum. So you see that between 10 and 35, then this kind of thing play a role, but we have also used plane wave scatter determinant. I sketch, you know, some of those which contribute. So here we have particle created in state of momentum K. And then using very few of them too, it turned out that the ground state has both a good projection over site slatter determinant and plane wave slatter determinant. This is, for instance, the projection that you have for this intermediate state over a certain combination of plane wave slatter determinant. So the idea was to say that the understanding of this intermediate ground state will be easier if you combine the two bases which are appropriate either for the weak or for the strong coupling limit, and a combined basis you know, we were able to recover a large projection of our ground state for intermediate interaction. So, you know, we were also thinking what is our system? Is it a liquid? Is it a solid? It seems to be something intermediate. So if you look at the average interparticle spacing, here you have a very good disorder. For some technical region, I will skip. And then what you could see is that you have two scales which reach their asymptotic value, which should be three in the system we have considered, before this the other scale, you know, you have four particles, so you could define six of those distances. And then what you could see is that you have two particles which are formed, which form a molecule before having a four-particle molecule. Okay. Which could correspond either to this kind of thing or to this kind of thing. And a more careful analysis of this seems to favor this, where you have this triangular object which is well established, while this one is still delocalized. So, well, you know, I have the same information with four and with three particles that it seems that some separation between the charge are established at a certain threshold, but the complex formation of the molecule requires a larger interaction. And then, if we look at the effect of disorder, we have here the data for very, very weak disorder and for larger disorder. And you see again this interesting behavior of the relative fluctuation of the shortest distance that you could define with your four particles, which are indicated on this curve, or the largest distance that you could define between two particles when you have four. This is defined by this curve. And you see there is indeed some signature of some intermediate behavior which turn out to occur between 6 and 30. So there is something interesting to understand, even for not only with three, but also with four particles. So the general observation is that disorder help the formation of those correlated objects. Here, you have for different disorders, the first energy excitation, average over the disorder. we see that this will depend very much on interaction, and we have the Leuven crossing, which we have here. But if you look at the value at which this energy starts to increase with interaction, there is a threshold which goes from 10 to a value which could be of order 4 with disorder. Here I am considering disorder such that the motion of the particle will be diffused inside the system without interaction. So we can observe this, but you could observe something even clearer when you look not at the average value of this energy separation, but at the statistic of this energy separation. For a small interaction, the first excitation is well described by random matrix theory. We know why it is the case without interaction, but you know this result still survives when RS is of this order. But when you enter in this new regime, then you see a very clear deviation from the random matrix behavior for the statistic of the first excitation. So this is also another signature which tells you that your ground state, or at least you know, the two first states that you have, are doing something special when you increase the coupling strands. You see, this is relatively abrupt. So for those weak interaction, the statistic is very well given by the Wigner surmise, and then suddenly you could see that the statistics start to deviate from the Wigner surmise. Another signature of this could be given if you study the persistent current. So for instance, if you pierce the stories by a flux, you will generate a persistent current. And we have looked, for instance, at the value of the persistent current driven by this flux as a function of the interaction. And at the same threshold where we see that random matrix theory do not describe the first excitation, we see that the self-consistent artifact approximation do not describe the persistent current. So what you see in green is the self-consistent artifact calculation of those persistent currents. They are extremely well described up to this threshold. But when you start to have correlated two particular objects in your system, then the artifact approximation is unable to give you what is the persistent current driven by the flux. So this is also another way to detect when you start to enter in some more complicated correlated regime when RS start to be and then you have another threshold, as I mentioned, where you form the rigid molecule and the current, the persistent current is suppressed. So if you look, for instance, on a given disorder system to the map of the persistent current, you see three maps with interaction, where you have a graph of current, intermediate interaction, where the persistent current is still large, but oriented, and then much larger interaction, where you have formed the rigid object, and the persistent current is suppressed. So, you know, this is another way to demonstrate that in the system there is something interesting which characterizes intermediate coupling parameter.
So,
yes, I think maybe I will stop here, right? And if you do what you want.
No, unless you want to focus on very last conclusion or something.
Yes, because you know, I could say something when you put the spin, and when you look at the magnetization, and then you see also the signature, you know, on the magnetization of some intermediate regime.
I have a comment. Ah, comment.
Well, but I think, you know, my time is over, so maybe I have given, you know, the main message.
Okay, well, so, comment.
The comment is the recollection about another Santa Barbara workshop in the Scopus in 1991 with Joe Imre and John Dinkinson, not yet here, before this building was constructed, it was in the sixth floor, and we had then a talk given by Efes about numerical simulation on classical Ullmann system.
If it's 91, it's not recorded.
Sir?
If it's 91, it's not recorded.
Yes, exactly. That's why I'm coming as eyewitness.
Kinetic energy,
sir?
It had no kinetic energy at all.
No, it's classical.
That's a classical system. You don't need any kinetic energy. But what was mentioned there, what was discovered, that there is kind of in the interval of RS between 36 and 37.
I don't understand. In
the interval, he had a system of classical electrons.
So RS is infinite.
No. RS is infinite, but temperature is finite.
Okay, this was my.
The temperature command. Is finite, and that was and then the ratio of temperature to mean energy, mean Coulomb energy at mean distance was something which we substituted for RS. So the interval of this artificial RS between 1.5 to 35, he saw that the density of state had a growing dip, which was growing like a Coulomb gap. And that is precisely what you have noticed as a deviation from behavior of the intellectual level.
Yes, but here, I stress
this, your... This is published.
But here, I mentioned this problem of classical melting versus quantum melting also, when you have...
There is no melting. This is correlation in liquid.
Yes.
Under condition of the fact that you transition, because RS not 1, but 37, means that there is interval of the density. Where you have no independent motion of the particles, you have strongly correlated liquid. So transition occurs not between independent and solid, but between strongly correlated liquid and solid.
And so is what the transition is sort of a sharp thing that you see at a given RS, or because from this finite size?
If I use the parameters, we call gamma in this case.
We know pretty much about this transition. There is a sharp transition. What I'm going to say, what Everest was strongly emphasized, and I remember, and now testify to you, that in this strongly correlated electron liquid, this correlation changes very strongly the character of density of states, the character of electronic states close to the chemical potential and all that. So what you see now, and what you are talking to us now, in the liquid, not in the in the solid, is another approach to the same air phenomenon along the density line, not
right. This is what is mentioned in this work I mentioned by Rosabikant et al. Also, they say that they have looked at the classical melting and they have this picture of that you are losing orientational ordering before radial ordering with temperature classically, and they say now that when you squeeze your system and you stay at very low temperature, you have the same story.
This still occurs at low temperature. What I'm talking about, what Everest was talking about, it was about isotropic liquid. In isotropic liquid, there is strong correlation which gives you things like the
So, Paco, yes. You have a quick question. Can you estimate the sign of the compressibility? For large values of
Yes.
Because now I'm asking
is
that people.
But I see for this compressibility story, I need a compensating background to recover.
Yeah, but people are making
here I have no compensating background.
Filling the second subbar in a quantum way.
Yes.
So it will correspond very much to your case. I mean, you have the first subbar, which has a small value far S, which is like a reservoir, and then you fill the second subband.
The subband, you mean the subband of the main interacting property?
Yeah, I mean you have a quantum where you...
It's more complicated than this, you know.
Yeah, but it's...
No, it's not this, you know. If you look at the projection of your ground state and the band structure, this is not at all, you know, that you feel the first subband. It's a very complicated projection of an extremely excited band that you obtain.
No, but I think what he's saying, if you have a quantum well and the first subband is completed, then this is kind of a reservoir. And when you put
you change the chemical potential, and then you fill up the first subband first. I mean, when you hit the bottom of the second subband, you will start filling that band, and it will be like this. But what they usually observe is a first order transition, and the number of electrons in the second subband abruptly jumps to a finite value. So you never find small, high values of RS in the second subband, probably because the compressibility is negative. Mm. It's like working a fixed chemical potential instead of a fixed number of particles.
This is a real negative compressibility, real instability.
Yeah.
Not what people are talking about, you know, the 2D gas and the compensate each other. This is just like Van der Waals. It's like a Van der Waals loop.
Yeah. It's a first order phase transition.
So, questions? One thing in the simulation that you show of quantum Monte Carlo, that they call a parabolic well, you could see the order that the order was getting destroyed in the right direction. So do they have also simulation where there's no symmetry breaking? I'm not going back to the next question. But
no symmetry?
Because in this simulation there's clearly a symmetry breaking, right? So
yes, but you know, the picture is misleading. You know, you have to look more carefully at what they mean by those pictures. Because the system is invariant under rotation, so in the system you see nothing. So yeah, you know, you have to be more careful at the meaning of those pictures. You know, look at okay. So you know, this is in some sense some. So you know, the system is invariant under rotation. The density is invariant under rotation. And to remove this invariance, you have to do something which that I explain, which gives you this sample picture of having a well-defined molecule.
Right, but even in that case, you say that the melting is done before in the radial direction.
Yes.
But there you have broken the symmetry because you have a confining potential like that. Then it's sort of intriguing to understand why it happens in two steps.
You may break the rotational symmetry, you know.
No, right. That's why this
which is the only symmetry that you have in the parabolic trap.
So, okay, well, that's from here.